Thank you. And thank you, Jackie, for being amazing. And thank you all for coming out. I'm going to read three essays, two of which are very short. They'll be over before you even know it. On the way to the Temple of 10,000 Skulls. In Vietnam, my aunt leans over and says, "Take notice of our oxen. They are strong and well-fed." And then we cross the border into Cambodia, and my aunt says, "Now look at the Cambodian oxen. They are malnourished and poor. That's how we were before, and now we are rich." She lifts her hands and thanks towards the cloudless Cambodian sky. On violence. Once, my father's friend, the skinny man, brought over a dead goat. He had hit it with his minivan. My father helped him bring it in because it was too heavy for one man to carry alone, but they sent me to my room first. I had never seen a real goat up close before, and I was excited, even though it was already dead. But I didn't argue. I didn't fight. I was just a kid then, still sleeping with my mother, even though I was too old for that. I played house with my barbels. They rolled and sat and drank tea out of tiny plastic pink cups. Later, the men will drink beer and eat stewed goat. Later, when I am taking a bath, the skinny man will come in and wash his hands. And I will watch how lathering makes bubbles and how quickly the water washes it all away. I will not look at his eyes in the mirror's reflection. The marbles will be slick with soap. On measurement. Spring. Chinese New Year begins in the spring. When I lived in Indiana, we neither sprung forward nor fell back. We stayed completely stationary while other states moved time without us. Damsels. Suspended in time, waiting, because charming is due to arrive when the snow fades from white to brown and primary colors begin to peak from the months of burial, right on cue. Some music scholars argue the Vivaldi's Four Seasons are sonnets. The Gregorian calendar was proposed by Pope Gregory XIII in 1582. The new year was moved from spring to winter. Leap years were calculated to the fourth decimal point. But spring is an awakening. All that has been dormant wakes as though charming has pumped life through these limp bodies. Buds push their way through sleeping branches like birds know how to begin their migration north when days commence in their elongation. Music following a metronome that counts downbeats. There is no downbeat in words, no time signature, just a series of accents that imitate an unwavering tick. The pendulum clock was invented in 1656, and time learned some consistency. Leap years are divisible by four. The academic year begins in the fall, when no other calendars begin there. The stars say the year begins in the spring, with Aries. Time, by papal decree. I have four apps on my phone for horoscopes. I check the internet, too, to see if stars can be interpreted the same way. I pick the most optimistic one and hold it close. Celestial time. Once there is no time, just thick ripe vines and thorns that form a ruthless obstacle course. When beauty wakes, spring opens her eyes too, and time rushes forth. And does she retain her beauty now that she is old? Will charming still love her? Lunar time. Any five consecutive months, excluding February and all her wackiness, contain 153 days. Feminized time. The tree shakes its leaves and down falls a dress made of new emerald leaves. It sparkles under midnight bells. Unfeminist time. Time must be taught. It's confusing. There is no variable for time in physics. The unit for solar time is the day. Although its math is precise, time has the texture of magic. Greece didn't accept the Gregorian calendar for centuries, but in 1923, the state relented. Time standardized for trains and later for the bombs of the Great War. Largo is defined as a direction. It's slow movement, 40 to 60 beats per minute. Snow White has only known spring. The human heart pounds softly against the ribs at 60 to 100 beats per minute. Andante versus Largo. Beauty's heart beginning to beat from 0 to 60 to a blissful ever after. Vivaldi marked the second movement of Winter Andante, which is 76 to 108 beats per minute. Time by rotation, of the moon like uniform cogs. Winter used to be faster. Under the Julian calendar, a year lasted 365.25 days. According to the Gregorian calendar, the year was only 365.2425 days, reducing the year by 10 minutes, 48 seconds. In Spanish and Italian, his name is not Charming, but the Blue Prince. Up to 68 beats per minute faster, a whole heartbeat's worth of time. The Common Era or the Current Era or the Christian Era, time measured through religion. Time neglects to honor Eastern traditions, where time moves in animals, crossing the line of their great race. Composed in 1720, the Gregorian calendar has already been accepted, but the four seasons, revolts, stands in the past, untaught. When Charming arrives, she is gone. She has already been saved a season ago. Leaves gather on branches. Resolute. Summer. In Port Townsend, reclined on a park overlooking the farmer's market and behind it the ocean, Ricky Ducournay and I eat salmon burgers. She says, "I don't like this boyfriend of yours." "No one does," I say. And, "But I'm in love." "Do you really want him in this book?" There's so much green here. The grass, the trees, the whole Pacific opening into Ricky's serious eyes. And of course she was right about everything, which became this revision. Fall. One beautiful fall day, there is a rabbit, and she is hopping along a stream. She isn't a particularly mirthful rabbit, but she's not dour either. She's just a rabbit, hopping along a stream, on an unexceptional day, an ordinary day. She doesn't ask for much. She doesn't need much. As she makes her way, she spots a large tiger. She panics. She doesn't know what to do. Her small tail is a puff of gray cotton. The tiger approaches. "Oh, whoa, whoa, old sport," the rabbit says. "Where do you think you're going?" The rabbit balances herself on her hind legs, uses her paws to gesticulate. Tiger has never been spoken to this way before. Who is this rabbit to be talking to him with such a common tongue? "I'm Tiger," says Tiger. "And who, pray tell, are you?" "Me?" The rabbit leaps and bounces right in front of Tiger's face and bounces back to safety across the river. "I am the king of rabbits." Tiger has never met any kings before and is suddenly nervous. To compensate, he says, "You may be the king of rabbits, but you're not the king of tigers." I fail to see how this is relevant because you, sir, are here, standing in front of the king of rabbits, and if you want to pass, you will have to pay a tax. Rabbits are known for their cunning. There's something inherently untrustworthy about those long velveteen ears. "Wait," says Tiger, suddenly suspicious. "Why should I believe you're the king of rabbits? Prove it." The rabbit laughs. "Do you think I have it printed on my driver's license or something? Wait, I think I might have a business card handy. I'm a rabbit. I'm the king of rabbits. The rabbit at this point is jumping up and down wildly. Tiger can barely focus on her. Of course, Tiger doesn't know the rabbit is a girl, that she cannot, in fact, be king of anything. Okay, fine. Let's do this. Let's just have a little contest, and I'll show you how much greater I am than you. Would that prove to you that I am the king of rabbits? They decide that jumping should be the first contest. When Tiger lines up to jump, the rabbit grabs a hold of his tail, and as Tiger jumps and jumps far, the rabbit uses the tail's momentum to fling herself even further forward. Whereas Tiger was pleased with his jump, its grace and distance, pleasure is quickly replaced with awe when he sees the great length at which the rabbit had jumped. It exceeded his jump many times over. Tiger's confidence drops. Suddenly, he is worried he has upset the king of rabbits. He has challenged his authority and made him compete in this stupid contest, which surely Tiger would lose. The next contest, they decide, should be vomiting. Now, it has been some days since Tiger has eaten, but he still manages to force some water out. The rabbit, on the other hand, releases a voluminous heap of tiger fur with a single croak. The rabbit chuckles, winks at Tiger, says, "Last night's dinner." She winks again, and Tiger takes off running into the woods. Tiger runs with such blind momentum that he runs right into a fox. The fox says, "Hold your horses there, Tiger." They are, it seems, friends. Tiger is breathless and panting. He says, "The king of rabbits is down there. He's going to kill me." The fox laughs. "Tiger, you silly." She fluffs her tail up in Tiger's face. She is, it would seem, flirting. "I can't believe a rabbit scared you like that. Aren't you supposed to be king of the jungle or something?" The fox convinces Tiger they should go back, and Tiger, knowing that the fox is not nearly as brave as she makes it out to be, ties their tails together, lest she run away in cowardice. Meanwhile, the rabbit is taking a nap. She is so very exhausted from all her adventures today, and just her luck, the moment she shuts her eyes, she hears a commotion. The fox and Tiger are trying to sneak up on her, but are still some distance away. She sits up, alert. Her vision is clear, and her brain is parsing out an equation for survival. She bellows out to these carnivorous beasts, "Well, hello there, dear fox. What are you dragging by the tail for me today? What is that, a little dog?" Realizing he's been duped, Tiger takes off at full speed back into the forest, dragging the fox along with him, all the way back to the little cottage he calls home. According to the Chinese, it is the rabbit who crosses the finish line to the great race next. According to the Vietnamese, it is the humble house cat, which, pray, tell, is the more heroic, the more deserving of an entire year dedicated to her. Winter. It's my final morning in Iowa. I've spent the past 4 weeks here teaching a fiction workshop on magic. There is barely any snow left on the ground, and the sun has not yet risen. This afternoon will be warmer, but I will already be gone. To ward off a winter of depression, I bought hundreds of dollars of yarn and knit cowls for all of my friends. Knitting, I felt manic and desperate and then finally calm. My fingers looped yarn, and something solidified, quickened into something else. Cornell College supplied me with an old Victorian house, gabled and ivied as if straight from a fairy tale. The wood below my socked feet groaned at every step, and ghosts are only imagined in stories. On the first day of class as an icebreaker, I had my students play light as a feather, stiff as a board. In small groups, students huddled around another student who was lying on the ground, perfectly stationary. Using just two fingers to lift, they chanted, "Light as a feather, stiff as a board. Light as a," and I walked around and saw nothing happen. "You have to believe," I chided. "You're not believing." And the students chanted, "Light as a feather, stiff," and still nothing was happening. This was no surprise to me. It shouldn't work. Outside, snowflake ballerinas spun and they spun. I said, come on, guys, you have to at least try. The students chanted, light as a feather, stiff as a board, again and again, until a girl began to lift off the ground. Her classmates' fingers barely touched her. She was rising, as if effort and determination alone could bring forth magic. I looked over, and the other group was standing, and their girl was floating nearly waist high. The students rearranged the tables and returned to their seats. I call a thing magic if I cannot immediately understand the process by which it is made, like electricity and felt, happily ever after in swamp coolers in the desert, like discrimination and cruelty, like the residual buzz that rattles in the small of your ear when all you should hear is silence, like a threat. How did that work, I asked. That's not supposed to work. The students' faces were bright, celebratory. I mean, physics tells us that you can't lift a whole adult person off the ground using a couple of fingers and some chanting. The heater kicked on, and its low warble invigorated me. It's just not possible. I had an entire lecture planned around why the exercise hadn't worked, about how we as adults are too skeptical to believe in magic, about how we put all our faith in science, which not too long ago was also a form of magic, about how we're cynical and that's sad, about how we can no longer access childhood wonder. My entire lecture was obsolete. I let the class out an hour early. Still without sun, the sky begins to lighten. This is my favorite time of day, just the watching. As if using vision for the first time, these colors absolve everything. In a few hours, I will leave here, and I want to say I'll leave here changed, but I haven't. But at least I made it to the end. I taught fairy tales and myth and magical realism and just plain magic. Students wrote stories of travails of shape-shifting foxes, the housing of damaged souls, eternal return. Round one, yarn over, slip two, knit one, pass two over, yarn over, knit three, repeat from start to end. Round two, knit. Round three, knit three, yarn over, slip two, knit one, pass two over, yarn over, repeat from start to end. Round four, knit. I took pills to keep me alert, to push aside sleep in order to finish my critiques in time for workshop. I put little hearts next to beautiful passages, and across their pages, I drew squares around my marginalia. I read my end notes verbatim because I have never had the confidence to speak without clear talking points. I said, once is an accident, twice is a coincidence, three times is a pattern. I said, if there's a rifle over the mantelpiece in the first act, it needs to be fired by the third. My students wrote down every aphorism and nodded their heads. On the autobiography of Red, a student said, this book was a waste of my time, and I caged my violent desires inside me. A loneliness that might as well shove you into the snow and leave you there, broken. The wind, its savagery and its wrath. I want to hold time in my fists. My students sewing books as coffins of memory. The weekends here make me desperate. Alone with myself, its jarring solitude and quiet. Snow melting. The dimming of noises, I am only my knitting bones. What is tense, that slippery beast? I purl and then unpurl, counting stitches in multiples of four. For two winters now, Harold has broken up with me and we have mended. Sometimes he is cruel to me, sometimes delicate, as though I were an exquisite thing. My ambivalent desire, survival. My house was dry and it felt like summer in there, but outside, winter continued to bloom. I unstitch the reel and out tumbles magic. I've made my bed every morning. It's the little things. Some nights I fell asleep with every light on. I couldn't reach the lights. I was crawling along the floors with exhaustion. Winter, deep in my bones. The Iowa sunrise, the pink sky, I'm captivated. Thank you.